All right, Dr. Paul Thomas is the author or co-author of The Vaccine Friendly Plan. This is one of those books that actually tells you how to spread out your vaccines, which ones are necessary. I have Dr. Paul Thomas joining me in studio.
Good to see you.
It's an honor, man.
It's an honor to be here.
It really is. You know, I say it over and over again. You know, getting involved with Vax changed my life. I'm a journalist. I'm hungry. You're always looking for a good story. This story blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I may have left TV behind. I don't know if they'll ever take me back. But I don't have a license on the line. I mean, yeah. One of the things that allows me to speak the way I do is, you know, there's people out there that support, you know, the work that I'm doing. But there's no license. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. You guys that are stepping up and really in this time, I mean, censorship, your book's on the line, right? I mean, are you worried about this, you know, joining those other books and saying?
I honestly, Del, was shocked to read on CNN Business that Paul Thomas's book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, should be pulled from Amazon.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, this is not an anti-vaccine book.
Right.
In fact, that whole term anti-vaccine gets overused just so you can lump everybody together and
right.
get this feeling like these are bad people.
Right.
I vaccinate every day in my office. We had this measles outbreak in Portland, mm-hmm. Southwest Vancouver, Washington area. And in February alone, we gave almost 200 MMR vaccines and over 500 vaccines. That's not an anti-vaccine doctor.
Right. Right.
I am doing my part to help the community establish and maintain some community immunity, if you will. You know,
okay.
That's a debatable topic on most things.
I would debate you on that.
Absolutely.
But, okay.
But with measles, our immunity is amazing.
Yeah.
So we had this outbreak, and there were initially a case and then three and then 49 cases. It turns out they were all from an initial case in Vancouver, Washington. And here's the story.
Okay.
So I'm in my office a few weeks ago. There were 49 cases already proven in Vancouver, and we had just gone from 1 to 4 in Portland.
Okay.
And I have a child come into my office who has cough, congestion, fever, and then a rash.
It okay.
definitely could have been measles, and they'd been at the Moda Center, which was listed as one of those places.
Okay.
So my doctor calls the health department. I say, call the health department. Let's see how to get a sample to them. We'll make sure we're not missing a case of measles.
Right.
They told us specifically there had not been a single case of community-acquired measles. The entire outbreak, don't send us your sample. I'm like, what? Because the news, the same health
right.
department, is saying this is so highly contagious.
It's going to linger for 2 hours. Anyone
9 out of 10 people exposed will get it. Well, there were 20,000 people in the Moda Center. There was the airport, IKEA, all these various offices.
Right.
Nobody got it. Not one person.
And you got that word from the highest authority there
from
is.
The actual health authority, the doctor, the health authority doctor. So what that told me, and if we look at the data, we know that the immunization rate for measles in the Portland and Southwest Washington is 95%,
mm-hmm.
way more than you need to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back when, in 1965, when we started the measles vaccine program,
yep.
You know, you would need about 60-70% of the population to have had measles, and it wouldn't go through the community. So you'd have these little outbreaks. We all had measles.
Right.
I don't know if you're old enough to have gone through that, but
I
was.
I don't remember. You know,
yeah.
I actually now have to – I still want to get my titers checked. I mean, I don't know what I had,
right.
what I did.
See,
my mom
at.
Was like this radical. She would just say, you're just not sick.
Right.
I refuse to accept that you're sick.
Right.
And so that's
so,
how I dealt
but
with
this measles story just, unfortunately, you guys had it with the Disneyland thing
yep.
back in 2014.
Yep.
Now Portland, Oregon, and Southwest Washington were the measles folks, right?
Right.
And then, state by state by state, they try to ram through mandates to vaccinate everybody because of the crisis.
Right.
When my experience, I mean, real live experience in my office, clearly there was no crisis.
Right.
But across the country,
right.
Oregon's being used as this example of
right.
how these unvaxxed people are putting others in harm's way.
Right.
Nobody's died, and no, I mean, I have unvaxxed people in my practice. I know the beginning of your segment, you were
yeah.
talking about that. We need to go there because I've got some very fascinating information for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into that a little bit. So you allow all types of people into your practice, correct?
Right.
How does it work? If I come to Paul Thomas and I say,
yep.
I want you to be my pediatrician. I got
yep.
two kids. I got a son that's 10 and a daughter that's 5. And
come
maybe
on in.
Let's say I have a new baby.
Yep, come on in. So prenatal, new baby, we're going to have the talk.
Okay.
Okay. How do you keep your baby healthy in today's toxic world? You need a balanced immune system.
Right.
If we highly vaccinate at a very young age and vaccinate while you're pregnant, it tips the immune system into autoimmunity and allergy.
Okay.
And now that's a problem.
Right.
But don't worry, we have immunosuppressants. So we
right.
can
be on the rest of your life. Just
don't worry. Yeah, we can
out.
Balance you back.
We can drug you the rest of your life. You'll be just
Unfortunately,
fine.
Unfortunately, immunosuppressants, the number one moneymaker in the country, tip you the other way. Now what do you get? Cancer and infections. Mm. So we want a healthy, balanced immune system. How do we do that? And I go through it very quickly. Real food, avoid toxins, supplement with vitamin D. Stress is a big thing to avoid. And the X factor beyond sleep and exercise and the normal things we know about biome is the vaccines. It's mm-hmm. the biggest piece of the toxic puzzle. We have tons, hundreds of articles showing that overstimulation of the immune system when they're very young,
yeah.
immune activation it's called,
right.
triggers neurodevelopmental problems. So the science is already there. We understand why we're having vaccines trigger people into autism. But wait a minute. There's no link.
Right, there's no
right?
link.
This so, is, right. so I was in this dilemma. I get approached by authorities and say, prove to us that what you're doing, your vaccine information, which I'm not anti-vaccine.
Right.
Like I said, we're vaccinating all the time. Most of my patients vaccinate, but almost none of them follow the CDC schedule.
Okay.
The easiest way to explain that one is the hepatitis B.
Yeah.
You catch hepatitis B from sex and IV drug use. That
right.
new baby you're about to have is not going to have
right.
sex or share dirty needles. And unless their mother has hepatitis B,
which you've already tested for, right?
You've tested for it.
Right.
I know you've tested for it. I go in to see babies in the hospital, and the moms are all hepatitis B negative.
Right.
So why would we inject 250 micrograms of aluminum when the daily max for an adult of injected aluminum is 50?
Right.
Right. right? So it just makes no sense. Make matters worse, we now know that babies who get the Hep B series as infants don't have protection when they're teenagers.
Which 24, would be the whole point.
Exactly.
Right.
So we're not only causing direct harm by overstimulating the immune system and injecting a toxin, a neurotoxin, aluminum, we're also putting them in harm again when they're sexually active.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, at least, you shouldn't do that. But in Oregon and in states across the country, if a parent makes that logical, scientifically based decision, their kid can't go to school.
Right.
Like in California.
You right, have, crazy. Right? You can have hepatitis B and go to school.
Go to school.
But
right.
if you don't have the vaccine for hepatitis B, you can't go to school.
I mean, right.
It's insane.
It makes no sense.
Right.
Clearly, there's another agenda.
Right.
Right. When things don't make sense, you've got to look for conflicts of interest.
Yeah.
But back to the story, I'm asked. Show the proof.
You're on the chopping block. So we got CNN's talking about
yep.
you. Everyone knows there's you and Bob Sears both have two different ways of sort of
yeah.
going about vaccination.
Not, right.
I'm not going to get into what the differences are, but
yeah.
there's really two doctors that come up on this discussion.
Discussion.
Right?
So I'm asked, show the proof that what you recommend in your book
yeah.
is safe, safer than the CDC schedule.
Okay.
Well, I thought to myself, and this was just a couple of months ago, wow, okay, let's look at it. So I commissioned an independent quality assurance project. That's
okay.
the only way you can do it. This guy who came in, Dr. Graven, he had no interest in any agenda.
No skin in the game.
Not at all. He's a scientific nerd. Sorry, Dr. Graven. He really is. The guy's brilliant. He has set up health informatics systems in 45 countries.
Wow.
He did a deep dive into my data, and I said, just to begin with, find how many are unvaccinated, and then list all the vaccines that everybody got in my practice who was born into my practice.
Okay.
Because I attract so many families like your
sure,
example.
Right.
You've got a couple kids. You got
yeah.
A, yeah.
yeah.
So let's just do the ones born into my practice who get the advice that I give, which is informed consent. You're in charge. Here's the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives for each vaccine. It turned out he found 3,345 patients born into my practice in the last 10 and a half years.
Okay.
So this is just a perfect sample size.
Right.
Let's look at the outcomes. I said, look at their vaccines, every single one of them, and let's just start with autism. That
right.
always seems to be the elephant in the room.
Sure, right.
So he looked at it. Here's what he found. There were 715 with zero vaccines, unvaccinated, out of those 3,345.
Okay.
One case of autism.
Okay.
All right. A rate of 1 in 715.
Right. We're currently at right around 1 in 36 or 1 in 50,
45, whatever you want to, whether
depending on which study you're looking
right.
at.
Right.
I actually personally think that the 1 in 36 in New Jersey, because they're the ones where doctors really are mandated to sort of report
yeah.
the autism,
there is a
that's
lot
at
of
1
under-reporting.
In 32.
There is that's a lot of
1
under-reporting.
In 32. So we're somewhere, I think, in the 30s, but go ahead.
So 1 in 715. Dr. Graven said, Paul, this is real world data. This is amazing. He was shocked.
Wow.
And I had no idea what we were going to find. I mean, I had a clue because my patients are so incredibly healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got two waiting rooms, sick and well, and there's hardly anyone ever in the sick side. And my well side is just overflowing packed. So I'm like, this is different than how I used to be when I practiced. Well, what about the others who were vaccinated? So we've got 2,645 partially vaccinated.
Okay.
They got anywhere from 7 or 8 vaccines up to about 16 or 18, I think was the most. Most kids this age would have had somewhere between 25 to 40.
Got it.
So they're like, you know, slower.
Right.
Those patients mostly followed the vaccine-friendly plan.
Okay.
But I do want to clarify for your listeners, because I'm not promoting the book. I'm not promoting the vaccine-friendly plan. I'm just sharing data.
It's just data.
This is just data.
Just what it found.
There were 6 cases in those 2,645 for an autism rate of 1 in 440.
Wow.
Compare that to 1 in 40 or 1 in 45.
Yeah.
This is a 1,000% improvement.
Right.
What would that mean for real-life Californians? We have about 400,000 births a year in California, and if you reduced the data of autistic kids, we would be saving 9,000 cases of autism every year.
Just in California?
Just in California.
Wow.
In the country where we have 4 million births, we're talking 90,000, almost 100,000 cases of autism per year being spared if you believe this data.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So sometimes I ask, well, what do you think? Do you believe it? I don't know. It's real life data, as Dr. Graven said. He says there's nothing more powerful. It's more powerful than a study.
Right.
Right? Because this is, I saw the beginning of your program, you were talking, what we need is a vaxxed, unvaxxed
study.
Well,
this is fairly randomized, right? Like, I mean, Plotkin keeps saying, like, randomized. These are just people that randomly are coming
into
your practice.
They're coming in, and in fact, and
they live in Oregon.
They live in Oregon.
I mean, so you can't compare them to people who live in Arizona. We might have some difficulty there.
Well, what I'll tell you actually, Dell, is when this data gets an IRB, I mean, you know, this was just a quality assurance program, so it's not publishable. It's just, I'm just sharing it because it's so important.
It's very important.
But when an IRB is done and the data is deep dive into this data, and the data is secure, so there's no way they can get rid of it. It's secure in many places.
Yeah.
What they're going to find, the researchers that finally look at this data, is that those 715 unvaccinated are the highest risk of all. And here's why. So in my practice, you came in as a new family.
Yeah.
If your other two children, you had autoimmune issues or autism, we're going to say, you know, you're at higher risk for damage from vaccines. You may want to think about just going with none. All right?
Interesting.
We don't have
of the people in that group came into
higher
you.
Higher risk.
At a higher risk
Absolutely.
Level, and you still are at 1 in 715.
Yes.
That's so amazing.
So it's amazing. This is a very high-risk group. I suspect we'd be more like 1 in 1,000 or 10,000 if we had a just low-risk population like most people. So anyway, the data's extremely powerful, and I totally agree with you at the beginning of your show. We need more data.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Dr. Paul's not saying vaccines cause autism.
No.
But he's sharing data that
you're
seems to...
You're showing us a signal, right?
This is a strong signal.
It's a very strong signal. And when you talk about science, you got to look for the signals.
Right.
And they're trying to tell you there are no signals.
Right.
There is no debate.
Right.
Your data alone and Mawson's data that we...
Well,
the vax versus unvax study.
Right.
This is really happening. There's studies all over the world that's coming up with the same data. And that's why I'm demanding a vax versus unvax study. Go into the VSD, open it up, and not just, don't go in there and try and manipulate it and put a bunch of sick kids in there. Do a decent study with both sides represented. I'd love for you to be on a panel like that.
Absolutely.
You know, to be on a panel, people say, look, I don't have skin in the game, but here would be how you would do this study in a sensible way.
I want to clarify one thing for your listeners, because if people go out and buy the vaccine-friendly plan and they implement it, buy the book.
Okay.
They're going to have worse numbers than the 1 in 440.
Okay.
So here's why.
Why?
In addition to following that program, if that's what you choose to follow, if you're out there thinking, oh, this is a good thing for me, make sure you don't have a lot of autoimmunity in your family.
Right.
Make sure you don't have a lot of neurodevelopmental stuff like autism. That just puts you into a much higher risk.
So all those that you threw into the unvaccinated
category. Those would be in the unvaxxed. But the vaxxed side where we had a 1 in 440, it would be way worse than that if it weren't for another thing. So this is why I want to just clarify this.
Please
so people
do.
Don't just blindly follow this.
Yeah.
You're going along with the vaccine-friendly plan or Dr. Sears' approach or some slower approach, which is probably a wise choice, and your child starts to have some delays or what I call glitches. You know, I had one this week that was starting to flap. They were brilliant in every other way, fine motor, gross motor, language, even eye contact with somebody. They were starting to flap. Or maybe they start losing some skills, a little bit of loss of eye contact, a little bit of loss of, you stop. No more vaccines.
Right.
That kid just gave you a signal.
Right.
A very strong physical signal. I'm having trouble. My immune system's having trouble. And that's why I think we got away with being able to vaccinate as much as we did. The vaccine-friendly plan protects against everything you would need to worry about that could kill your kid.
Right.
You're protected against pertussis, whooping cough. You're protected against the meningitis, the Hib and the Prevnar. And we can go over each one of them and why they're not such great vaccines anymore.
Right.
But that's out of the scope of this. But just if you were going to follow that, I beg you that if you're starting to see anything in your kid that, as a parent, your gut's telling you something's not right,
listen to
your gut.
Listen to
and
that.
Don't do any more, and you probably will have a good outcome.
That's phenomenal. I mean, you sit here, but you're talking, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, you're digging your own grave here. I mean, I swear to God, in the climate right now, I'm thinking the things you're saying are so disastrous to the pharmaceutical industry right now, aren't they?
Well,
if the CDC is saying there's only one way to do the schedule, any other schedule is dangerous. And I've said it over and over again on this show that the Institute of Medicine has already said we've never tested the CDC schedule. It's a fully untested schedule.
Every time they add a new vaccine.
So actually, yours is more... I think you actually are the only tested schedule based on what you've just said.
We now have data.
We now have data with an unvaxxed schedule
versus this.
And the CDC's never bothered to do this stuff, as far as I can tell.
No, they haven't. But as far as you raise this question, I should be afraid or whatever. I admired you, what you did. You had a great career. I mean, you were running the doctor's show.
Yeah, I got my Emmy. Where is it? Over there? I got Emmy Award. That's pretty good.
And you gave it up because you saw in your heart there was a need here that was just screaming at you. Well, imagine I'm actually seeing these patients in my office. What woke me up was 4 years in a row, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, a normal one-year-old in my practice regress into severe autism. Mm. That didn't happen in the past. There were no autistic kids in my life growing up.
Right.
They didn't teach us a single class on autism in medical school in the early 80s.
Right.
There was a couple mild cases in my residency program in the mid to late 80s, and then something happened. I mean, it's just been like rocket.
Yeah.
Right? And as we add more and more and more and more toxins, more and more stress on the immune system, it's not just vaccines, because I had one, right, out of the 715. Yeah. It is possible to have autism.
Yeah.
It is possible to have all sorts of medical conditions. But what does it keep to be healthy? Healthy, balanced immune system, eat real food, avoid toxins. Vaccines are not helping the picture.
Right.
Right? So you may get a little bit of increased antibodies against what you're vaccinating against, but there's hundreds of other diseases, and the highly vaccinated people, their immune system is not as robust and able to fight those other infections. So people say, oh, Dr. Paul, your approach, you're going to put everybody at risk. No, it's the opposite. We're going to have people with better immune systems who are going to be sick less, taking less illness into the schools, because the question always comes, well, what about that poor cancer kid?
Right.
Right. They're on chemotherapy, and they should...
I would, number one, say I'd like to know, you know, what the cancer rate is amongst the unvaccinated, because it very well could be that cancer is already a vaccine injury, whether it was coming through your mother, a DTaP vaccine, a flu vaccine.
I wouldn't be surprised because of the messed up immune system.
Until I see the study,
right.
I'm going to go ahead and say that very well may already be a vaccine
injury. You might be right, but if it's your kid who has cancer,
I know.
You want your kid safe. But here's what I'll tell people, just to remind them. When you're going through chemotherapy, you're not going to school. You're not going to the grocery store. Not when your immune system is completely shut down. Your oncologist will tell you, keep this kid home.
Right. A cold will kill this kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's not those unvaxxed kids, because actually they're healthier. They're going to bring less illness to your cancer patient, your child, than the vaccinated kids who could be shedding live virus from a vaccine or tend to be sicker. So that whole argument, I'm sorry, I know the infectious disease experts are always floating that and testifying. I've gone to testify against mandates, and that's always what I'm hearing. You know, it's tears and crying about the kid that they took care of. So I have taken care of kids who have died when I was in training. I've taken care of kids who died of infectious diseases.
The Hib's the big one I always hear, right? Like I've watched someone die of...
Yeah, and it was a great vaccine when it first came out, Haemophilus influenza type B. Guess how many type B Haemophilus infections there are today in America? Almost none. They're all non-type B. The vaccine is against the wrong strain.
Wow.
This is what's happening with most of our vaccines. The organisms shift, but because the vaccine manufacturers have no incentive to improve their vaccines.
No liability.
No liability. And what?
HHS isn't doing its job.
Mandated profits with no liability.
Amen.
So we keep injecting tired old vaccines that are almost worthless and overstimulating the immune system. It's tragic. And we don't need to be causing this much harm. My fellow doctors, it's first no harm.
Yeah.
And it's hard to wrap yourself around that, your head around that, because we don't have good data. We have study after study after study that you started.
Done by the pharmaceutical industry. And when you read it, it's so obvious.
They are association studies that are so weak that there's no association.
Right.
So therefore, vaccines are safe.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
You have to compare the whole schedule with the unvaccinated or even with the partially vaccinated and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I started a nonprofit FOI, PediatricsHealthOutcomesInitiative.org.
Okay.
And that is the nonprofit with the sole purpose of doing prospective studies that'll compare vaccinated to unvaccinated or partially vaccinated. And it's not unethical because we're just following what parents are choosing to do anyway.
Right.
I can't talk those 715 patients into giving a vaccine if I wanted to.
Right.
And oftentimes I will encourage people, go ahead and do it. If they don't have any risk factors and they're nervous, they're not sleeping about the measles that's in town, even though I now know it wasn't a big scare. But before we knew that, we didn't know. Right.
So I think people are watching this, Paul, and I've asked you this before. We've had you on Skype, but how is it that you saw the patient coming in every year that regressed into autism? How is it that you can see a hand flapping in your office or some sign that the vaccine is having a reaction and the body of science there, and all the doctors are on the same side saying vaccines don't cause these things? Are you wired differently? Is there what do we need to do to get pediatricians to say, you know what, here? What would you say to educate them so that they could do a better job at protecting children?
Yeah. So I used to think how you thought, right? That's how we were trained. Vaccines are safe and effective. Look how wonderful they are. We eradicated smallpox and polio, et cetera, et cetera. And I watched vaccines have benefit for the Hib. So we kind of get reinforced.
Hold on 1 second. I want to do this another way.
Yeah.
See this little tiny camera right
there?
I'm going to cut this little piece of video out. I want you to talk to the pediatricians of this country and get them on a page where we can start making children healthier. You want
All
to
right.
take a moment?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Fellow pediatricians, I ask you this. It is our charge as pediatricians to be the protectors and the caretakers of the children from the time they're in the womb till we pass them off to the adult doctors. Now, we are seeing, and we have seen, if you're old enough to have been doing this for a few years, you're seeing this rise of all chronic diseases, and you're not able to explain why. So we have to admit what we don't know. And what we don't know is why are we seeing chronic diseases to the point where every other child graduates high school on chronic medication. It wasn't like that when we grew up. So why, I ask you? Now, I want you to have an open mind because I've just shared data from my practice and more will be coming. Mark my words, you can take me out, but you can't take the data away. It's coming that will show beyond any doubt that the vaccine program that we have in this country, I'm not anti-vaccine, I'm just saying the current schedule is far too aggressive for the immature immune systems that are having to be sustaining this onslaught of not, the antigens are fine. You guys know, I mean, it's true. Kids get exposed in the dirt to all sorts of hundreds of antigens. I believe it, and their immune system handles it fine. But it's what comes along with those vaccines. The toxins that are in there, the aluminum, the formaldehyde, on and on and on. The immune system gets confused. So if you look at neurodevelopment and biological development of brain and immune system, a lot is going on in the womb, and a whole lot's going on for many, many years after birth, especially the first couple years. Pruning and all the things that happen with our nervous system and the immune system. So we have to be mindful of this. We just assumed that vaccines were safe, but we never looked. So I've looked. I was asked to prove whether or not my advice, the vaccine-friendly plan advice, was safe. And I didn't know for sure how safe it would end up turning out, but you have the data. For the unvaccinated, 1 out of 715 had autism. For the vaccine-friendly plan or slightly slower, 1 out of 440. This is real-world data. And I just plead with you, just at least entertain the possibility that what we were doing was actually part of the problem. That's so hard to wrap your head around. I remember being in denial going, no way. There's no way I'm doing all. How could I possibly be causing harm? Well, at least in any child where you see a slight deterioration in any sort of developmental milestones, give that kid a pass. Let their immune system recover. Don't keep vaccinating according to the schedule, because I'm telling you, their body, their immune system is telling us something. As a physician, we're supposed to look at the patient in front of us. This is very, very big stuff. It's hard to wrap your head around it. The systems are trying to ban books that have good information. Let me tell you, if you try to publish information that, for example, the information in my book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, I could not get it published. You see, everybody on the editorial boards at all levels, they won't have it. They will not let you publish things that say there's a problem with our vaccine program. The fear is we're going to lose the whole program. Well, let's not go there. Let's get some real answers, right? So let's ask for the vaxxed versus unvaxxed. If you want to throw in there partially vaxxed, that's fine. It's going to give us some very, very important information. Until we have that, let's reject these weak association studies as proof of safety. That's tobacco science. We learned that back when the tobacco company was telling doctors that it was safe to smoke. And they would do these studies where, okay, you're going to smoke a pack a day, you guys smoke two packs a day, and in a year we'll see who died. Nobody died, so therefore cigarettes are safe. How did we figure out that cigarettes were not safe? We had huge studies of smokers and non-smokers, and then we had real data. That's all we need, vaccinated and unvaccinated. And you don't have to worry about the ethics, because the parents who don't want to vaccinate will come out of the woodwork when you let them. Because they are learning more about the immune system and what's messing it up than we were ever taught. Thank you.
That was awesome, man. Truly awesome. And so inspired to have you out there. You know, I know it's not easy. You get attacked from both sides. You get attacked from people that are, you know, strictly anti-vaccine. How could you be giving vaccines to your children? So yeah. I'm going to ask you that hard question.
Right.
For all sides, because I want all sides represented on
sure.
the show. How do you still give vaccines knowing what you know now?
Okay. I really believe, Del, that we have to honor people where they're at. So everybody who went from, you're not born anti-vaccine, you're born not knowing nothing about vaccines, and most people were educated that vaccines were wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, their eyes started to open and their minds started to open, and they started to realize we've got a problem here. So, and I went on that journey, and you might have, most people have. There are people who lived in a family that didn't vaccinate and their mm-hmm. parents were informed and knowledgeable and kept on top of it all the way, so they were like true and true anti-vax from day one. But most people go on this journey. So if you come to me, and here's what's really tricky. I've got one parent saying, I don't want to vaccinate. And I've got another parent saying, no, we need to do them all. This is the science. And if I can help them pick a safer schedule, I think I've done a service to that kid. Mm-hmm. Because if I can get people to just not do the Hep B, to not vaccinate while they're pregnant, mm-hmm. the outcomes are going to be way better. Mm. And then if I can get people to recognize, if your baby's showing any sign of delays, whatever it is, or glitches, hold off. Stop. Don't keep just rolling as if it's no big deal.
Right.
Right?
So many people say in that circumstance that Peter says, oh, that's normal. Don't worry about it.
Right.
It's normal.
So the other elephant in the room is, what if nobody vaccinated?
There's a big question.
The
yeah.
big fear yeah. of the public health systems. What if nobody vaccinated? We'd go back to the dark ages. Well, let's think about it. How dark would it really be?
Right.
So let's go through the vaccines. Hepatitis B, it wouldn't make a bit of difference.
Yep.
Seriously. I mean,
yeah.
you could do Hep B for teens if you want, but it wouldn't make a bit of difference. Polio has been eradicated. It wouldn't make a bit of difference. Rotavirus, you can't even give it after 6, 9, 12 months because it makes older kids really sick. The data from my practice showed kids who got that vaccine were actually having more vomiting and diarrhea than the kids who didn't.
Wow.
It won't make a difference.
Plus, I mean, and that's a third world illness.
Exactly.
That's dangerous in the third world.
A modern country where you have access to IV fluids.
Right.
In the last 10 years, I've had one child need to have IV fluids for rotavirus, and that was a school-age kid.
Yeah.
It's not going to make a difference. Measles, mumps, rubella gets tricky.
Okay.
So, before we introduced the MMR, we were having about 450 people die of measles each year in this country.
Yeah.
Let's say we go back to that.
Yeah. Which is 1 in 10,000, I want to point out.
Sounds
like a big number, but that's
1 in
10,000.
It's 1 in 10,000. When we introduced the chickenpox vaccine in 1995, they had to justify it on pure financial reasons. There were only 50 deaths per year, and that wasn't enough to justify the vaccine.
Right.
So I guess in the public health mind, there's something between 50 and 450 that means that, 450
is huge,
right?
Oh, my God.
But there is this financial thing, too. When we start to look at when we start to realize, once we get these better vax to non-vax studies, when we start to realize that the chronic health problems are very significantly impacted by our vaccine program, now you start to realize you're killing people with asthma attacks. You're killing people with allergies to peanuts that didn't used to happen.
Totally.
People are dying of suicide because they're so anxious and depressed. You've got the autism, the spectrum, the on, and autoimmunity is just through the roof.
Right.
It's probably largely vaccine-induced. When you look at the magnitude of that, and what if that reduced to 5, 10% of what it is now? And you had 450 die
saved
a year.
Far more lives.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
So if we're gonna look at the horror of people dying of measles, we gotta look at the beauty.
I would still question whether it would even still be 400 or 500 people now.
I doubt it because we've got the understanding that vitamin A helps and take it as beta carotene.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. Yeah. I don't think it would be near that.
All right, but we get it. 450. Moving on. So what are the other ones?
What's left? Chickenpox.
Yeah.
So chickenpox used to kill 50, we had very little shingles. Now we have 100 deaths per year or more from shingles, and everybody's getting shingles. We traded a relatively minor illness that people always had. I had, you had, our kids all had, for something that's horrible. A lot of pain and suffering and more deaths.
Right.
So that's, we could get rid of that.
Right.
Don't even get me started on things like HPV,
which
other countries have figured out that
this
is a very, very dangerous vaccine. They don't even recommend it. But
for a problem we don't actually even have. That could be like if you have a gynecologist, you don't even have an issue.
The HPV vaccine, we really haven't proven that it's doing anything good because that virus, the body eliminates anyway.
Right.
And it takes decades to develop the cancer.
I said this just the other, it just hit me that nature had a 90% efficacy rate against HPV before the vaccine ever came along, meaning nature clears it from your body.
Absolutely.
There's very few vaccines that have a 90%
efficacy rate. And, if there are 45,000 deaths a year from that cancers that they think are caused by that virus, we don't know that the vaccine is going to significantly improve that, honestly. We don't have the vaxxed, unvaxxed, long-term proper placebo. The DPT is the one that scares everybody, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis.
Yeah.
Well, we get one case of diphtheria every other year in the U.S. It's been eradicated.
Right.
Tetanus is actually only a handful. There aren't that many cases. We just had one hit the press because they were in Oregon. So, what's up with Oregon here?
I
actually saw that kid. To leave the hospital, they wouldn't let that kid out of the hospital unless they had a pediatrician. They didn't have a doctor. They were from a farm. I said, I'll take care of you. And so I saw him. It was a devastating case.
Yeah.
But he lived, and there are so few of those. I'm not saying, oh, my gosh, the sky's going to fall. But, no, the sky won't fall if we don't do that one. What about the pertussis, whooping cough?
Yeah.
So here in California recently you had a school with 30 cases of whooping cough, all of them fully vaccinated.
Totally.
Completely vaccinated. And there were unvaccinated kids in the school who didn't get it.
Right.
That vaccine isn't working anymore.
Right.
Okay? It's almost worthless. 80% plus of the pertussis, the whooping cough organism, is pertactin protein negative, and I believe the vaccine was made against the pertactin protein.
I don't even know what that means, but you sound smart.
It's just some technical stuff. But whatever.
Right.
It's not working. In fact, I used to recommend cocooning. So you're going to have this baby you're going to have.
Yeah.
And I'd say, well, you should get the pertussis vaccine, the Tdap, and all the caregivers, so you don't bring pertussis home to the baby. Well, we now know that doesn't work.
Right.
Because people who have been vaccinated are still shedding the virus.
Right.
They're still carrying it.
They can also carry it. They can get it. They cannot know they have it.
Exactly.
Symptoms aren't there.
So,
right.
So that's not working. So we're not going to lose anything if we give that one up. Hepatitis A. Ah. So as a pediatrician, I'm one of the busiest pediatricians in Oregon, and I have seen none cases of hepatitis A in my entire career. Oh, we should rush out and vaccinate, Dell, because it's really epidemic on the West Coast.
God, never seen one case.
Not one case. Why? Well, we miss it. It happens, the immune system takes care of it, and you get better. Kids don't get super sick and turn yellow and die of chronic hepatitis.
So it could be there, it's just
it
like
just
it's
passes
so minor,
through like
right.
another virus.
Right.
Have I left any out? Prevnar. Prevnar and Hib, the meningitis ones, because the organisms have shifted, they haven't got the vaccine to keep up with the organisms, they're not very effective anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, really it wouldn't make a huge difference. But like measles, there would be some deaths, right? And that's the thing. When you, if it's your child who's died, well, Dr. Paul, you don't care? No, that's not it. It's horrible. I've been with families who've lost kids.
Right.
It's horrible for you. But I've also been with families who've had vaccine-injured kids, and that's horrible.
Right.
So where is the balance? We need to stop finger pointing and you darn non-vaxxers, you're causing this and you vaxxers are causing this. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
We all want the same thing. We want healthy kids and we need to quit pointing fingers and insist on the data.
Agreed. And so let's compare those two groups like you have with your, I mean, that's really astounding data that you're bringing to us for the first time. I mean, you just called us about this the other day. I'm really psyched you made it in. Paul, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Dell. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any way to put like a chastity belt around your license? Like you just hold on to it, like strap that thing down,
well,
lock it up,
you
keep
know,
them away from it.
I can't, Well, there's some famous quote. I should be better at this sort of stuff, but you guys will know, whoever's watching, if you witness something and you don't do anything about it, you're part of the problem. There's a better way to say that.
Yeah, I think that got the message across.
Right? I mean, you just, like you doing what you're doing, me doing what I'm doing, I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Right? I don't have a choice. So, you know, if you want to fault me for telling you how it is, well, I have nothing I can do about that. I'm not going to stop talking.
All of our prayers are with you, Paul. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Dell.